Hello, everybody. Good evening, and welcome back. Last week, we began to discuss the halachos of brachos, and as I mentioned last week, we'll see how far we can get in this. We'll try to take it little by little, and we discussed last week the halachos of mezainis and hadama. So I want to review what we spoke about last week and perhaps understand it a little better. And then this, hopefully, will move on to the halachas of when it becomes from mezainis to benching to birchas hamazon. So we explained that all wheat products of the chamesh haminim, wheat, rye, oats, barley, and salt, they all begin life as ha'adama. That they're something that grows from the ground. They're not no different than any other vegetable. And as such, their natural bracha is hadama. In order to transition into a mezainis, they need to turn into what's called a ma'aseh kedera, which literally means something which is cooked or baked. That's the literal definition. So minimally, they need to be cooked or baked or roasted in order to start making the transition. However, Chazal say they need a little bit more than that. A ma'aseh kedera doesn't just mean that it's been cooked or baked. It means a little bit more than that. It is a certain type of food. And they give it one of two defining processes. Either the wheat kernels or the pieces of oat have become stuck together through this cooking process, or the cooking process has softened the individual oats, barley, wheat, pieces enough that they have begun to disintegrate. If either of these two conditions are present, then the bracha is mezain. So let's go through a couple of examples. For example, puffed wheat cereal is ha'adama, because although the steaming process that they use in order to puff them would be considered cooking, they nevertheless they don't stick together, nor do they disintegrate. So therefore, they remain in their hadama state. Loose granola. What is granola? Granola are pieces of oats that you stuck to perhaps other things with honey and with nuts and whatever. And then they're basically baked or roasted, but they still have not stuck together, haven't formed a mass. They're individual pieces of granola, and therefore they do not become a masa kedera, although they've been cooked or baked, and they remain hadama. Oatmeal, on the other hand, is mezainis, because through the cooking process, even instant oatmeal with just hot water is also considered a cooking process. And what happens is it forms into a mush. So it's become stuck together. Therefore, it has transitioned into a ma'aseh kedera and becomes a mezainis. Barley soup and chalent, for example, although those pieces don't necessarily stick together, they're perhaps floating around in your chalent or in your soup, but they've softened up through the cooking process to the point where they disintegrate slightly, therefore they're mezainis. So again, if either they've disintegrated slightly or they've become stuck together through the cooking process, then they become a ma'aseh kedera, and only then do they become mezainis. So now, this rule is pretty straightforward, with the exception of two things which are under debate amongst contemporary paiskim. One is granola bars. Some places can hold that granola bars don't really constitute a ma'aseh kedera because they don't really get stuck together through the cooking process. Rather, they're just stuck together because of the honey. And then they're basically dried, solidified with the cooking process or baking process. I personally follow the opinion of Rav Shlomo Miller, Shlita, who holds that it's mezainis because he holds that this is considered a cooking process and we look at it like it's stuck together through the cooking process. And therefore, it's a mezainis. But don't be surprised if your children come home from the Torah school saying that it's hadama. And don't argue with them, because this may compromise their ability to win the brachos beat. Between me and you, you can make a mezainis on a granola bar as well. The second question amongst contemporary paiskim is rice cake. The process which rice cakes are made doesn't really involve any water. So what happens is that the kernels are steamed in a special process which causes them to puff up, sort of like what happens to popcorn. And what they do is they stick a bunch of kernels of rice into a like metal disc, and when they get tough, they just stick together from natural moisture, and they're held in place by this disc, which gives it the form of a rice cake. So some place can hold that this doesn't render them a Maisa Kedera, and therefore they're Hadama. But here also, I make a Mezainis, and I believe that's the majority opinion in this case, that most people make a Mezainis on rice cakes. But here also, you might find that some people make a Hadama on rice cakes, because again, the rice cakes, although they're not Chameshes Aminim, their Mezainis is determined by the same process where the Mezainis of all anything which is, you know, the Chameshes Aminim as well. So wheat, barley, rice, all those things, all depends on the same thing. It depends on do they get stuck together or do they disintegrate slightly through the cooking, baking process. If they get stuck together, they will be Mezainis. If they do disintegrate slightly, they will be Mezainis, but otherwise, they stay a Hadama, and the way I've been explaining it with granola bars and rice cakes, basically this rule remains true, that as long as the pieces stuck together through the cooking process, it will always be Mezainis, and therefore granola bars are Mezainis as well as our rice cake. Rice Krispies, interestingly enough, although they're individual pieces, we still make a Mezainis on them, because the rice kernels, when you puff them up, do disintegrate in the puffing process, and therefore they do get a status of a Maisa Kedera, although they're not stuck together because they disintegrate, whereas other puffed wheat cereals, like Sugar Smacks and things like that, remain a Hadama because they do not disintegrate in the cooking process. So as everything, when it comes to cereals, you do have to have an understanding of the Metzius behind it, so you'll generally have to look it up, you know, on the Star K list, or ask someone to know what the process is like. But this is the factor used to decide what bracha should be. Again, does it stick together? It's a Mezainis. Does it disintegrate? It's a Mezainis. But otherwise, it remains a Hadama. The bracha achrayna is affected as well. If you make a Hadama, then you make a Baron of Fashis as a bracha achrayna. If you make a Mezainis, then you make an Alamichi as a bracha achrayna. And these brachas are not interchangeable. If you make a Baron of Fashis, instead of making an Alamichya, you're not Yotze, and you need to make an Alamichya. The opposite is also true. If you make an Alamichya, where you're supposed to be making a Baron of Fashis, you're not Yotze, and you have to make a Baron of Fashis. So therefore, it's important to know, both for the Bracha Achrayna and the Bracha Rishayna, which is the correct Bracha on these foods. So, Parasha Tol, this is a Parasha that's full of many different things which are very, very difficult to understand. The relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka, the relationship between Esav, Yitzchak, Rivka, Yaakov, what happened, what the brachas were all about. And these are very, very, definitely very deep and largely esoteric topics. But I want to discuss a pasuk over here in a medrash, which is actually a fascinating pasuk. It's right in the middle of the story of the brachas where Yitzchak was intending to give the brachas to Esav, and he sent Esav out to hunt and bring him back something that he had hunted. And meanwhile, Rivka, who had knew about the plan, took the skin of goats and clothed Yaakov in those skins so that he would have the feel of Esav, and asked Yaakov to perform essentially a trick on his father and to pass himself off as Esav, so that he would get the brachas. So when he approached Yitzchak, we all know that Yitzchak was surprised that his voice sounded like Yaakov, although he felt like Esav, and he said, "Hakol kol Yaakov, your voice is like Yaakov, and your feel is like Esav." But then there's a pasuk which is not as famous, and Yitzchak used another one of his senses in this process. Right? He didn't have eyesight, so he felt Yaakov Avinu. And he listened to Yaakov Avinu, but then it says, "Vayigash," Yaakov came close, "Vayishakla," and he kissed Yitzchak, "Vayorach et reach begadav," and Yitzchak smelled the scent of his clothing, "Vayivarcheh," and then he gave him a bracha, "Vayomer," and Yitzchak said, "Re'ei reach b'ni," "See the scent of my son, k'reach sada sheberach Hashem," is like the scent of the field that Hashem blessed. So Yitzchak Avinu employed his sense of smell as well. And apparently the smell that Yaakov Avinu had impressed him so much, it caused him to give Yaakov a bracha besides the bracha that he was about to give him. he immediately gave him a bracha, and he said, Re'ei Re'ech B'ni, see the smell of my son, the scent of my son is like the scent of the Sada Asher Berech Hashem. Now what is this Sada Asher Berech Hashem? What field are we talking about? Rashi says, brings the Medrash, and Rashi says that really, what was the act of Ravini wearing? He was wearing goat skins. He says, we've never experienced this, but sometimes if you smell a shofar, that's a pretty new shofar, it has a pretty horrible smell. So he says, there is no more disgusting smell than the smell of goat skins, and particularly freshly skinned goats. So why did Yaakov Avinu have such a wonderful smell? So Rashi says, the Reach Gan Eden came in together with Yaakov Avinu, and this was the Sada Asher Berech Hashem that Yitzchak was referring to. He smelled the Reach Gan Eden together with Yaakov Avinu. Now that's a fascinating thing, you see, because Gan Eden is not really a physical place, although there is a Gan Eden HaTachzon, but essentially Gan Eden is a spiritual place. So what is it exactly that he smelled, and what does the smell represent? So there's another medrash, and I'm not sure if these two medrashim work in sync, but perhaps they do. The other medrash says that don't read that he smelled bigodav, the smell of his clothing, but rather read bogdav, he meant, which means traitors. Yitzchak divined the smell of Jewish traders, and was impressed. He smelled in Yaakov Avinu, which means an aspect of Ruach HaKodesh, he smelled the future traders of Klal Yisrael, the Rishayim, and was impressed. Now what does that mean? So the Medrash goes on to explain with two stories. Yosef Meshisa, fascinating story. Yosef Meshisa was a Jew who was clearly a Rasha, and it was during the time of the Charbon of the second Beit HaMikdash, and the Romans were about to loot and plunder the Beit HaMikdash, but they were scared. They were scared to go in by themselves. And they said, you know, I have a good idea. Let's send one of them in, one of the Jews in, to loot the Beit HaMikdash. Now, which Jew would loot the Beit HaMikdash and be complicit with the Romans were coming to destroy it? Clearly, someone's, you know, if you want a more modern-day example, it would be like someone who collaborated with the Nazis to kill out a whole 20,000 Jews in a town. Probably much, much worse than that, if we have a little of understanding what the Beis HaMikdash meant to the Yidden. So there was a Jew, his name was Yosef Meshisa, and he was prepared to collaborate with them. And he went into the Beis HaMikdash. And they told him, you go in, the first thing you bring out will be yours, and then the rest will keep. So he went in, and he chose the grand prize. He walked out with the menorah. They saw him walking out with the menorah. They told him, listen, this, what are you going to do with this menorah? You're going to melt it down? We're not going to let you melt it down. I can't destroy a thing like this. You're going to use it? A simple person like you doesn't use a menorah like this. Leave this for us, and you go and bring something else. You can keep that. So Yosef Meshisa said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going back in. It's not bad enough that I've angered HaKadosh Baruch Hu one time. You want me to anger him twice? So they made him a sweet offer. They said, listen, you will collect taxes for the next 3 years, and it'll all be yours. This is how scared they were to go in themselves, as a side point. So he said, no. He refused. They took him, and they started torturing him. They put him onto a sawhorse, and they started cutting him into pieces. And he was screaming the whole time, Vai, oi, oi, shechasti lebari. It's a fascinating thing. You have a person here who started out as being the lowest dregs of Jewish society possible. A terrible, terrible Rasha. He was willing to collaborate with the Romans, do something the Romans themselves were scared to do, go in, steal the loot of the Beis HaMikdash, and give it over to the Romans for very, very selfish reasons, to get the money. He did it one time, and then he could not do it again. And he was willing to endure torture, to give up 3 years' worth of tax. He would not do it again. What happened over here? Chazal said, this is what Yitzchak Avinu smelled, and this is what, so to speak, blew him away. And he gave an immediate bracha, and he said, Rei Re'ech B'ni K'Re'ech Tadash B'Re'ech Hashem. See the Re'ech Gan Eden. So first we have to understand what happened, what did happen, what actually did happen to Yosef Mashiach. So what caused him to come to affect such a tremendous change, to go from being the biggest traitor to being someone who's dying on Kiddush Hashem? So there are a number of different explanations, but they boil down to the same thing. Every person has a point that the bear, the rock bottom for him. And when a person hits that rock bottom, he can't help but to go up. Avraham Shmulevitz explains it in this way. He said, Yosef Mashiach went in, and he came out, and he realized he had just committed the worst possible crime a Jew can commit. And he had done the worst possible treason to the Jewish nation. And that hit him. And then it uncovered the little spark of Jew that was always there within him. And from there on, he went upwards. He couldn't go down. He realized he had to change. The Panovitcher Rav says he walked into the Beis HaMikdash. And a person walks into the Beis HaMikdash, it makes that spark of a Jew, no matter how small, no matter how bad, it sparks it up. And it brings it out. And it emphasizes it. And he was overcome. The point being that even the lowest dregs of society in Yiddishkeit have a spark. They have a part of them that will not let go of Hashem, no matter what. We say when we start Yom Kippur, we say, Ki l'chol ha'am v'shkaga. That's one of the first pasuk we say right after Kol Nidre. And Mefarshim explained what that means is that Hashem can see beyond our outer self. And all the things that we've done wrong and whatever it is that caused us to do those things wrong, but essentially they can be looked as a shegeg. A shegeg meaning something that we regret, something that we won't do again, something we didn't really do in our right mind. Because if you push us to the wall, our inner self is going to come out, and that stays 100% a tzaddik. Yitzchak Avinu thought he was speaking to Esav, and he understood that Esav wasn't a perfect person. And what he wanted to see in Esav was this aspect. He wanted to see that there is a unchangeable point of him which will remain true to Hashem. And that's what he would bank on when he gave him his brachas, with the hope that the brachas would bring about that change and the brachas would bring him up to that level. That's not who he met, however. In truth, that wasn't true about Esav, but it was true about Yaakov. And when he smelled Yaakov, that's what he was sniffing for. He was sniffing to see, is that there? Is that unchangeable spot in the Yiddish and the Neshama exist that it can't be changed and it can't be shaken and it can't be moved? And he saw it. And that's when he said, the Reach Gan Eden is here. There's a part of the Yid that's so connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It lives in Gan Eden, so to speak, and it can't be moved away. And at that point, he felt comfortable giving Yaakov Avinu the brachas. And this is a very inspirational thought, and is truly what we do start Yom Kippur off with, that every person can reach inside himself and tap into that power that a Yid has, that every Jew has, and through that, have the ability to affect change, to have the siyata dishmaya, the strength, and the inspiration to change ourselves. Have a good Shabbos and a good night. Kol tov.